Quimera de Hobbit is the next gear.
It's got it.
I think I've got probably the best bit of the talk because I actually get a chance to talk about socialism, the thing that we're actually interested in. When you put forward the idea of a moneyless, wageless society, one in which people can take freely the things they need, you're immediately faced with a problem. And this problem is getting people to take you seriously. After all, we've probably all been told many times that money somehow makes the world go round, that everybody has a price, and that no matter what the adverts may say, nothing is in actual fact free. So, when you put forward these ideas about a moneyless, wageless society, people ask, how could we possibly live without money? Who in their right mind would work for nothing? And these questions are very reasonable and not particularly surprising, seeing as we live in a society in which, for the vast majority of us, money is a very important and serious matter. Evidence of this is to be found in the way in which money, or more accurately, the lack of money, dominates our daily lives. We think about it, we save it, we talk about it, we fantasise about winning it, and we even sing songs about it. This fascination and preoccupation that we in the working class have with money was well explained by Oscar Wilde when he wrote, "There is only one class in the community that thinks more about money than the rich, and that's the poor. The poor can think of nothing else. That's the misery of being poor." Now, our opponents who object to these ideas are very quick to tell us that a moneyless society is impossible, it's utopian, and it's naive, and their attack takes many forms. Firstly, there are those who favour the human nature argument. They say, yes, this is a very good idea that you've got, but it's got one major flaw. It wouldn't work. When we ask why it wouldn't work, they tell us that it's because people are naturally greedy, they're naturally selfish, and therefore the very idea of a society in which there was free access would be unworkable. And if this wasn't bad enough, they've got some more bad news for us. Had we also forgotten that people are just waiting for the opportunity to indulge in their favourite pastimes of raping and murdering each other? Now, what's strange about this argument is that the people who use it generally don't apply it to themselves or their family or their friends or the people living next door. It's the rest of us. We're all the people that are afflicted by this human nature. Problem of human nature. However, what these people are really talking about when they talk about human nature is in fact social behaviour. And the thing about social behaviour is that it's learned and that it changes and it adapts to its environment. So at this stage I'll say that human nature is not a barrier to socialism. Now, a second argument comes from the so-called realists. And you can always tell a realist because within 5 minutes of talking to them, they've told you at least twice to face the facts, whatever these are supposed to be, and they continually urge you to live in the real world with its economic realities. We've all probably come across this. What are the realities that these people are urging us to accept? Well, they're the realities of closed hospitals whilst sick people are turned away. They're the realities of homeless families whilst building workers are chucked on the dole. They're the realities of food mountains whilst people starve and children try to eat dirt. And they're the reality of the construction of weapons which, at best, are a disgusting and useless waste of time and at worst, they're the very instruments of destruction. Now, the capitalists and their representatives also tell us that money is jolly good stuff. And of course they should know, seeing as they've got most of it. And I recently came across some very sad news in the Daily Mirror that the steel tycoon, Baron Heine Tyson, didn't have the £1,200 million reported. The poor sod was in fact down to his last £400 million. I was tempted to take a collection at work, but I couldn't catch up. Spurred on by their success in spitting image, the Queen and Prince Philip in between holidays or official tours, as they're called, have also been getting on in the act recently. The Queen, speaking from Buckingham Palace, a modest 600-room tied cottage, told the nation that there was far too much gloom about. And this right royal remark must have been a great consolation to those people who seem to make a habit of engaging in gloomy activities. People like the 4 million unemployed, the 60,000 homeless, the 7.5 million living below the official poverty line, the other 7.5 million living just above it, the sick and the elderly, who seem particularly prone to this complaint, especially during the winter months when they have the audacity to drop down dead because they can't afford to buy heat. Where's all of this leading then? Well, it's leading to a very simple question that I'd like you to ask yourselves about the way in which we live today. Is this the best we can do? I suggest that our own experiences tell us that no, this isn't the best we can do. And socialists go a step further and ask, if this isn't the best we can do, why do we put up with a society which is organised in such a way as to deny us the things we need? Why do we put up with boring, repetitive jobs, poor housing, unemployment, cheap and shoddy goods, the continuous threat of war? Why do we put up with these things? How might we live? Now, for some, notably those in left-wing organisations, any discussion about a future socialist society which goes beyond the boundaries of a reformed capitalism is in fact utopian. For these people, socialism is a distant objective that it's not worth telling people about, or it's what you have when the Labour Party is in power, or occasionally, as in the case of Lawrence Spiegel, who spoke here recently, it's a word that is heard, but as to its meaning, well, that's a complete bloody mystery. Now, the Socialist Party doesn't want to reform, patch up, modify or mend capitalism. We want to get rid of it. And not only do we want to get rid of it, we also want to replace it with a social system that's fit for human beings to live in. It's worth noting, I suppose, that for hundreds of years, people have been asking questions about what a new society might be like. For example, we could look at the book by Thomas More, Utopia. We could look at the primitive communism of the diggers. We could look at the lectures and novels of William Morris. However, what's exciting about our ideas, the socialist ideas, is that they're not conjured up out of thin air. Unlike the utopians who dreamt about a society in which lakes would flow with beer, might be a good idea, roast lamb would grow from trees, and where hens would lay soft-boiled eggs with spoons growing out the top, our ideas are based upon a clear understanding of capitalism as a social system. We see it as a historical phase in social development. As such, we would argue that socialism arises out of where we are today, out of the material conditions and practical possibilities that are thrown up by the 20th century. And we shouldn't forget here, I think, that our capabilities today, both intellectually and materially, are immeasurably greater than ever before. We have the modern technology of the microchip, the computer, the satellite, systems of global telecommunications. All of these things, we argue, could be used to satisfy human needs. So socialism shouldn't be thought of as an old idea of the 1880s, but rather as a practical possibility, as an idea which is directly relevant to us today in the 1980s. Now, it would be utopian and undemocratic for us in the Socialist Party to lay down some sort of blueprint for a future socialist society. Our argument is that socialism will be a society which we all construct together consciously and democratically, not another system that's imposed upon people, whether they like it or not. However, I think it is possible to point to certain general features that a socialist society would have to have if it's going to be worthy of the name socialism. Firstly, private or state ownership would be replaced by common ownership and democratic control. And what this means is that a tiny privileged minority of the world would no longer own the resources. These would belong to the whole community, and we would decide upon their allocation in a democratic way. Secondly, socialism would be a classless society. Classes would be abolished, as the old relationships would between capital and wage labour would no longer be of any use. Along with this, the state, the instrument of class rule, would also be abolished, as there would be absolutely no role that it could fulfil in a classless society. It is the instrument of class rule. Thirdly, production for profit would be replaced by production for use. This means that the sole aim of production would be to satisfy human needs. It would be about providing the best we could possibly produce. It would be about building houses for people to live in. It would be about providing food for people to eat. Fourthly, it would be a society of free access to all wealth. There'd be no buying or selling, no money or barter. People would take according to their self-defined needs from the abundance created by modern technology. And fifthly, it would be a worldwide system without national boundaries, without national frontiers, without national interests, and as a result, without wars. It would also be a society that would allow cultural diversity to flourish. Now, apart from satisfying our material needs, a social system which replaced competition with cooperation, war with peace, artificial scarcity with abundance, privilege with equality, would also have profound implications for the rest of our social relationships. For example, work, which today takes the form of paid employment, would be transformed from alienated wage slavery to creative, voluntary, meaningful work. Education would become a lifelong process in which concerned with the development of the whole person rather than something imposed upon children in compulsory institutions as it is today. Schools in the 1980s are places where children are taught to be stupid with their mindless discipline, their conformity and their distorted priorities. For more and more children in the 1980s, schools are somewhere they're kept until they're old enough to graduate onto the dole queue. Socialism would also bring about new relationships between people. We would have the time to develop our interpersonal relationships. We have the freedom to break away from traditional sex stereotypes and traditional roles, and people will probably no longer treat each other as mere possessions. The environment as well, our relationship to nature would also change. Instead of the economic priorities of capitalism, which lead to pollution and environmental destruction, we would employ, I would suggest, sound ecological principles. Now, all of these relationships would also be shaped by a very real democracy in which people would have the information and the knowledge available to make decisions. Now, socialism would, of course, have its problems, its natural disasters, its personal quarrels. Terry Wogan would probably still be on the telly every night, if that's what people want. Yeah. I'm afraid so.
Oh, no.
Perhaps we shouldn't have it then. And we'll still have to work to satisfy our material needs. Socialism is not a utopia. However, what it does offer is a social system which, for the first time in history, people will have a secure environment from which to foster their full potentiality. It will be a society in which the social obstacles, the so-called economic realities, are removed, which degrade and dehumanise and stunt our existence today. Having said all of this, our opponents who cling to the outdated and redundant ideas of capitalism will probably still continue to sneer. And the reformists will continue to get embarrassed by our insistence on taking socialism seriously. However, this is the Socialist Party's object, and it's the object we'll continue to work towards. What we now need to consider is how do we get from capitalism to socialism, and that's what Clifford should be dealing with.